Welcome to On Air with Tatiana D.
The hottest motivation show in your suburbs.
Do you feel the daily routine is catching up?
Are you a champion of your game?
And you need an extra dose of positivity?
Let's find out together how to live a happier life without stress or negativity. This is a story-driven podcast where we talk about motivation, inspiration, and success in almost our post-COVID reality. It takes an extraordinary eye to see the unusual in the mundane. Isn't that true? As people say, one picture is worth 1,000 words. And I personally am always fascinated by black and white photography because it always carries this timeless, almost regal stamp when you not just look at the photo, but actually see it. When you can pick, understand, and understand the message hidden in it. And as I say, when you can understand the intent of what the story the photographer is telling you. And today, I have a very interesting guest, Pep Williams, who is an American fine art and street photographer, director, entrepreneur, and former professional skateboarder who grew up in South Central Los Angeles. His photographs are absolutely, truly timeless and carry that signal. Stop. Don't go anywhere. Take it in and think. Not every photographer definitely can do that, but Pep absolutely can. So, welcome, Pep. What's your story?
How it all thank you.
How it all started?
Thank you so much. It's just so cool to be here. Thank you for this opportunity to talk. To talk about my work and everything. It's just really cool. I love it. Thank you.
Definitely. So how it all started, Pep?
Well, it all started back in 1996, actually. I was doing a runway show. And because I modeled for a minute because I was, tall guy or whatever. And one of the designers were freaking out. So we're like, what's going on? And one of the photographers they had hired to shoot had already booked another shoot with another designer. So they're all freaking out because the shoot was scheduled in like 2 days. So they're just trying to figure out how can we get a photographer like last minute. And I found out the job paid $6,000.
Wow.
I said, I'm a photographer. I never owned a camera. I never done anything ever, but I've been on many shoots and your assistant does all the work anyway. So they said, well, let's see your portfolio. And I said, well, we don't have time for that. We have to get this done right now.
Good save.
Okay. So they gave me the check. I hired this kid from like a photo class. I asked, what do you think we need? And he picked it out. He set it up. He did everything. I just pressed the button and I was hooked. I said, this was too easy.
Yeah, it is definitely.
Yeah.
So your professional career as a photographer, who are your biggest clients? Who you're shooting for?
Well, back in the day, back in the 90s, I shot for everyone from Calvin Klein to Lacoste to things with Guess to just a lot of bigger brands, because that's what it was. You had a photo agent, they gave you all the jobs, but there it was almost like a oscillating door of like photographers. And it really, like, there wasn't a ton at that time, so you had a pool of maybe good ones, maybe 40. So it was easy. It really wasn't hard, but I just got very bored with it. Exceptionally bored. Because you're making a ton of money, but it really isn't your work. It's what they tell you to shoot.
I hear you.
And it's like, I got frustrated looking in the magazine. Sure, you get paid 30, 40 grand a shoot. But when you look at the magazine, you look, it looks like the next page and the next page and the next page. And you really can't tell a signature style of the photographers. Like, you can't tell, of course, Herb Ritz had a style, Annie Leibovitz has a style, but back then everyone was copying off of everyone else. And if you didn't have the marketing money to push yourself, it wasn't happening. So I just had no interest in it, really. I guess this happened around 2000, maybe six or something. And yeah, so it was a good 10 years. And my friend, he offered to buy one of my pieces. And I said, buy? I never printed before. So I said, here, just take the file. I don't care. And so he goes back to Japan and he prints it, loves it so much. His friends love it. Then he comes back to me and asks, can we do a show for you here in Japan? I said, a show? What? I had no idea. So they did a show for me and everything sold. And then that's when I said, aha, I get to shoot exactly what I want and how I want. And then I said, oh, that's the fine art world.
Like, exactly.
Shoot exactly what you wanted. Of course, I still shoot for a lot of record labels now, but I shoot it almost at my leisure, if I feel like it, or if it's my friend, because I don't have to depend on it, meaning that, all right, I'm hustling, I gotta get this next job, get this next check. That ended probably in 2008. Like, I've just been strictly focused on my work. And by doing that, it's opened up insanely. Whereas my work is in museums, I'm in galleries. Yes. I'm a part of the curriculum at some of the colleges here in LA. So people are studying my work. And that comes from when you let all that stuff go and just really focus on your work, like your art, I should say. Because it's not even work, it's your art.
Exactly, when you can create exactly what you want and how you see it. That's amazing.
Exactly what you want, because I believe everyone is an individual and nobody can shoot what you can shoot. Yeah. So it's very unique. It's when people start copying off of each other, when it becomes like, but if you can just break away from that whole thing, and it's not, of course, if you shoot a tree or you shoot a person or a model, yeah, that's cool or whatever. But you have to shoot it in your way. Not exactly. Just because this creative director or this person is telling you to shoot it like this. Like, even now when record labels hire me, it's my way or no way. I'm sorry. Anyone. It's like, no, that's like, I should, like, my record is, I was doing a magazine shoot for Chris Brown. The singer, and he's like a good kid, and people were there, everything. I shot it in 4 frames. 1, 2, 3, 4. I said, we're done. And people are like, wait, what? I'm like, yeah, that's it. Because I know I have it. Whereas in the past, I would have probably shot another 30 minutes just to make everyone else feel good.
Exactly.
But it's not about everyone else. It's about my art and what you want for me to contribute to this project. And if I say I got it, then you got it. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Definitely. It's very, very, very true what you're saying. I have seen that absolutely unique piece of work. You collaborated with graffiti artist Risk. Jay Adams. And I was astounded to find out, well, it's really the picture, and we're going to put a link on the footnotes for our listeners to see it. But the picture itself depicting Jay Adams sitting in his a state of mind, let's put it at least, and I'm going to let you talk about it. But the combination of everything was amazing. We made with Graffiti Risk, and I found out that it's priced as $1.4 million. That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's, like, I've had offers for it, a little bit more than half, but I didn't show the piece for over 10 years. It's sad. My friend Jay never had a chance to see it because that was mine. that was our moment together. And he never knew I took that image. He never knew, because we were sitting out on the North Shore out in Hawaii, and he was talking with this one girl who was sitting next to him on the ground. And she was talking about a breakup, heartache, you know, so on and so forth. And he just became this father figure. And I'd known him close to 30 years, and I'd never seen that side of him before.
Wow.
And I was just like completely blown away. So I'm just sitting maybe a good 10 feet away from him, and my camera's in my lap because we're just sitting there, you know, just hanging out. Mm-hmm. And then the phone rings, and she gets up to go answer the phone, and he's just sitting there, and he's almost contemplating or thinking about the things he told her. It was the best advice you could have given anyone ever. It's almost like maybe I should have taken that advice. Mm-hmm. It was just, the thought was so deep, and I'm like, please be in focus. And I had it in my lap. I couldn't pull it to my face because it would have ruined it. He would have looked over. So I just put it in my lap and I took 3 shots.
Wow.
And that was my most favorite image. And the only reason I asked Kelly to paint on it is because he knew Jay. And like, uh-huh, we all go back over 30 years, because people, they all want to do stuff with that series, which is cool. But Kelly lived with him. Like, everyone knew everyone, and we're just pretty much like all family. So I said, Kel, I want you to do this. He's all cool. So we had it close to a year at his house. And I said, hey, Kelly, what's up? And then he finally, oh yeah. Then he knocked it out, and it turned out cool. It's his signature style. And like, for me, I never wanted to give it away. But if I do give it away, it has to be at one of the highest levels, and to help his son out.
Uh-huh.
Like, things like that. So it isn't just, oh, here's a cool picture, buy it. Because I've had numerous offers, which, mm-hmm, is, people say I'm crazy for not taking it. I said, but it's not about that.
It's a special piece for you, I understand, especially if the Kelly Risk knew the man. So it's kind of a tribute for 3 of you.
Yeah. And I told him to do whatever you want. I don't care. And then people like, but da 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 da. And it's a piece of one of one. So they're not going to be any duplicates or anything. And then there's the original black and white. So there's, mm-hmm, that piece, and then the original, and that's it. There's no more.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it sells, I'm going to destroy the file. Mm-hmm. So it won't exist, just those 2 pieces.
Wow.
Mm.
That should belong to the museum, to some high-bidding museum.
I'm sure it'll probably wind up, like, as time goes on, because I've been kind of grooming in that direction. And I'm already in one museum. I've been in a few, actually, but to be in the huge ones.
Something like LACMA would be, or...
LACMA's cool, but LACMA, their turnaround is so fast.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, you don't even, like, it never happened.
Huh.
It's like, I'm in LACMA, okay, great. Okay, it's done. And you'll never see that work or works for like the next 50 years.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Yeah, like, they're kind of known for that. Like most museums, when they have exhibits, because they own the collections. So they may bring it out 20, 30 years later, 50 years later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so me, when I tend to work with a museum, I prefer a permanent exhibit.
Yeah, definitely.
Something like that is like just amazing. Or an exhibit that tours.
That would be too.
So if you're in this museum, that museum, da, 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 so on and so forth. So it's constantly somewhere. Not just in a storage unit or something like that. I was at the Getty, and my friend works there, and they have tunnels underneath, mm-hmm, like the Getty. Dirty offices, plain simple, with these insanely $50 million paintings on the wall because they have no place to put them.
Wow.
Yeah. And he, nice. And like, yeah, my friends all pep, look, we have, I said, dude, this is insane. So they have so much work, they can alternate. But if you do go to the Getty, there are certain pieces there that will always be there.
Well, like, that would be amazing if one of your pieces is going to be like that. I would cheer up for that.
Yeah, so when you go to their main hall, they're anchor pieces, basically.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So the other angle of your work, which was very interesting to me, it's your photography in prison.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
Because, come to think of it, all we know, okay, such and such is criminal, that's it, gun, done, dealt with. We never even see or anticipate those who possibly may rehabilitate, and some of them do. They do come back to society, but what kind of life they have. So your photography in prison, absolutely amazing, mind-blowing, because it gives you, makes us think. So please share about that.
Yeah, the prison, it took me 4 years to get permission.
Wow.
I got denied so many times. Nope, nope, no, 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 no. Can't do it. Why would we let you in prison with a camera? No. So my friend, he speaks at a lot of the prisons and stuff. So I asked him, and then he's all pep, let me see what I can do. And then he actually made it happen. So I was like, whoa, no way. So now I have full access to shoot.
Anytime?
No. No, just for two prisons. I could shoot on the yard, anywhere. So I just said, all right. But the reason I went there, though, I went to shoot the tattoos. Because I wanted to, you know, because a lot of my work sells, like the tattoo guys. So I said, cool, what better place than prison?
Exactly.
Tattoos. So as I'm there, the first guy I walk up to, I say, hey, can I take a photo of you? He's all, sure, hold up a second. I said, okay. He puts on a sweatshirt. He had fully tattooed. And I was like, ugh. So I said, why did you, like, put on a shirt?
Mm-hmm.
Now, oh, this is my past. And I had to check myself because I was going there to actually take from them. Like, I'm going to take these cool pictures and look at me, everybody, I'm cool. So then I changed my entire direction of what these images were going to be at that moment. So it became showing them as, these aren't the guys who came in here. They're different. They've changed. And to give more of like a human side, if you will, something like that. Whereas my friend, like, he was a pro skater and I was. So we were allowed to bring skateboards into the prison. So,
wow, okay.
So the guys were riding skateboards, never done before, ever. And I had a chance to shoot it. And that's when the young kids pay attention. And they're like, whoa. And then because I speak at schools all over the world, like about this series, and they say, wow, it's crazy that they can skate in prison. And I said, the kid's 18 years old. He's like you. There's no difference. He just got caught up in a bad situation in life, but he's just like you. And then they're like, and it makes them think, like,
indeed. They're just like
us. Yeah. So it was cool. It was cool. I did a lot with it, and I'm still continuously doing things with that. And I just, like, I'm always thankful for that opportunity to shoot things that, because I prefer to shoot things that are almost impossible to shoot or not that easy to get to. And when I thought of the prison, I said, no one is shooting in the prison. No one.
Exactly.
Except these TV shows that talk about the crime and this and that, but no one's putting a positive spin on it.
Exactly.
But again, it's not a positive spin. I'm just shooting it. The people just tend to get a positive spin from the smiles, from the dancing, from the singing, from the this, from the that. So that's your own like perspective of looking at my work. And I will go to the museum at the Archery Museum in Los Angeles. They have a display of my work there. And I would listen to the people talk about my work, and they'll talk about it to me, not knowing I'm the
who you are. Okay, wow, that's interesting.
Just to get the like how they feel, and it's from across the board. Mm-hmm. From this is just beyond amazing, or I can't believe this guy did this. I mean, it's really interesting how you never know how a person will take the same image in, but completely different. Like perspectives and ideas like about the work. It's really interesting to see that.
I've seen that photograph. You mentioned that guy who put that white sweatshirt. That's really, I say that it's more powerful that actually he had that sweatshirt on and with little tattoo on the neck area.
Because, and it says faith.
Yeah.
That's why it's called faith. The one tattoo you see is faith.
Yes.
And I was like, wow. Complete just changed everything. My whole direction of photography.
Such a powerful message. You're absolutely correct.
It made me change literally how I shoot now, even. You know, I'm not trying to glorify a certain lifestyle that can endanger someone. Or because, of course, I've shot tough guys. You know, I've shot gangsters, drug dealers, this and that, but you never know how that kid is going to perceive that image.
Yeah.
That kid could be like, oh, this is cool. Most people, of course, they love it. People tattoo my work on themselves. Like, they love it that much. Uh-huh. But again, I'm not here to glorify something. And I'm not that type of guy to be like, well, I'm just taking a picture. If this kid does this, then that's on them. No, if I know it's going to affect one kid, I'm not going to do it. And I don't.
You mean so, in the wrong way? Yes, of course.
In the wrong way. Yeah, because for instance, if I shot a guy, let's say, with a gun or something, like pointing in this way, or if it's in an artsy way, cool. But if it's on the street where a kid can relate to it and he's hanging out of his car, no way, I won't do it. Exactly. I won't do it because it's cool to that kid.
And yeah,
like that energy, it's just not my thing.
You're activating different message. You would activate different message in the brain. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So I know that you've traveled around the world and you've been to quite a few different countries like Brazil, Germany, Australia, Canada. You mentioned Japan and others. I know that you recently went to the Leica exhibit in Austria. Could you please share? Yes, could share that, please.
Yeah, my friend, she runs Leica out in Austria, and she invited me out to come for the Leica flagship store. I think it's like a flagship store out there. And they have a cafe, you know, like a bar, you know, like upstairs. Mm-hmm. So I went, and it was cool, just great to see everyone, you know, because I know a lot of people at Leica. I've worked with them off and on, like, in the past. So they're really great people, and it was really cool, really cool.
That's wonderful. The other thing, you just came back to Sierra from Sierra Leone, and I know that you're going back there. What you were doing there?
Well, it's interesting because of all the works, because I had an opportunity to go to Africa, so of course I'm going to take it. But it has to make sense for me, and it has to be something cool that's going to make people think. So basically, I looked online, you know, pictures of Africa and this, that, or whatever. And it's always the same thing. Look at the little hungry kids, you know, needing some food. Look at the lions, look at the animals. That's cool. Nothing wrong with it, but no one's showing the people.
Exactly.
They don't need no help. it's like me, if I'm down here, it's like, for instance, there's these companies in Europe, they actually ask for donations for Europeans to send them money for the hungry kids in America. Hmm. And they just film kids on the street. And they say, oh, we need help. We need a donation. It's around the world. And I always tell people this. I say, you mean to tell me after tens and tens of thousands of years, the Africans haven't figured out how to get food yet? Please get out of here with that. They haven't figured out water. Come on. Like this one lady I was talking to, she's gonna say, oh, it was amazing. I love bringing them water. I said, why? You think this is the first time having water? And she's like, well, I said, come on. You see these rivers everywhere? These people have been here since the beginning of time. What we see is what the media shows us.
Exactly.
So these companies who pay them can make money. So I went there. I said, I'm going to show a different side. I'm not a different side, the side. Where, of course, there's kids in the village. There's people in the jungle. But they're doing their thing. They're maintaining. They're in the rivers washing their clothing. They don't need a washing machine. Oh, and this one lady said, oh, but what about the child, like the slave child, like how they get kids to work, like kid labor or slave labor? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I said, have you ever heard of chores? These kids aren't on sewing machines. These kids are milking cows. These kids are planting fruits and planting seeds or whatever they do, rice. How is that slave labor? You could say the exact same thing about the kids here in the Midwest who help their parents farm. It's all what you guys put out there to make it seem so much, but it really isn't. So I had an opportunity to shoot a graduation, strong images of, you know, graduates with doctorates and going into the medical field, going into law, going into government. I shot that. You know, I've shot people getting married, people getting proposed to, from the villages all the way down to the city. And the city is selfie everywhere. Everyone's on Instagram. It's the same as here. There's no different. But we don't see that because to the rest of the world, well, that's just like here. That's like boring.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
So I said, no, I'm going to show this and just shock a lot of people. Oh, and I have, this is gonna make you laugh. I have a shoot coming up in April. No, not shoot, a show in April. Okay. And in Malibu, and my friend is the mayor of Malibu. And my other friend, he's all pep. I want you to be a part of this opening of a new city hall. They're getting four photographers, or four or five, I forget. And he said, but I want you to do something different. I said, what do you want? I kind of knew what he was going to ask because we've talked about it before. He said, I want you to shoot the homeless problem in Malibu.
Uh-huh.
That you don't even have to ask twice. So basically, it's I'm going to be a show in Malibu with all the fancy people. With everybody looking at the pictures. Oh, look at the sunset in Malibu. Look at our beautiful city. Then bam, right in the face.
That's going to be what exactly we need to see to start thinking about it.
A reminder. And I just said, I want to do them very big, big pieces. Not these little 8x10s. I'm talking 5-6 feet. Big. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is life
right size. Right in the face. Life size. You're right.
So yeah. So that's a cool one coming up. So I'm excited about that. So I'll be shooting that over the next couple of months.
Let me know when it's going to be up. I definitely will come out to see it.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I can.
Definitely. Definitely.
And no one knows. No one knows I'm doing this yet.
Uh-huh.
So, y'all think
so we're sort of giving a preview to my listeners what you're going to be doing. Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. I'm privileged for the firsthand information. Thank you.
Yeah, some people think it's going to be waves, surfing, beautiful palm trees, Malibu mansions.
Oh, we've seen them all. We don't need more of those pictures.
Yeah, so it's going to be, yeah, it's gonna be something.
I'm sure it would be, and it's not just in Malibu. Homeless shelters are everywhere.
Everywhere,
unfortunately. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Look at downtown. What's happening there?
100%. But in Malibu, they just overlook it completely.
Uh huh.
Like downtown, it's there. Okay. People try. There's a shelter. There's a this, that, or whatever. In Malibu, there's really nothing. There's one thing. I think this one guy comes out once a week and gives people food or something. But there's no, Malibu does not, that doesn't exist in our world.
Uh-huh.
Well,
it will exist now after you will take care of it.
Well, we'll definitely. See.
We'll see.
Yeah.
What, I know that you are in your car. That's why we hear those.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. It's like
a blur. It's okay. Well, I always say that it's life. It's uncut interviews. I rarely cut out anything. I may not be doing yet at this point a live broadcast. It's coming eventually, but I just want to show to people that it's all doable. You don't have to have fancy studio.
Yes.
It's not about fancy studio. It's about what in your heart and what in your brain and the content you share. So that's all it is. So exactly. That was the reason why I wanted to point out there is like sounds from driving by.
In my car.
Yes.
On my laptop.
But on the other hand, sitting in a car, that's the best studio you can ever come up with because it's completely sealed and you're like inside the box. I need to come up with something like that in my own apartment. What is your inspiration? Who is your inspiration?
Who is my inspiration? I would say everyone. Yeah, I don't have, it's like for me, I'm not like, I don't carry my camera every day. Like I may touch it in a month, maybe not even a month, maybe a couple months, I may touch it, something like that. Because for me, I'm not the type, all right, like I can shoot, but it has to be something that I really need or want. It's like an itch. It has to be scratched. And
so perfectly said.
Yeah. And I can't get that every day. It's not going to happen. Because here in LA, it's cool. It's great. Not a lot of like inspiring things here because I know it so well. But if I come up with an idea or something, I get excited. Like in Malibu, what I'm going to do out there. I've been to Malibu thousands of times, but I've never shot it like before. I say it all the time. But this is very specific. So, okay. So it's cool. Yeah. But as far as, I guess I could say that. There's one photographer in the whole world that inspires me.
Who is that?
Only one. Her name is Julia Margaret Cameron. And to me, it's the top of the food chain of all, because she's a photographer from like the 1800s. And back then, you actually had to truly understand photography. You only got one click.
Yes.
So that's why I love works from like the mid to late 1800s. And like her work, and if you look at her work, you can almost see, I can kind of see why, like I can see her in your work almost in a way, with a little twist. But she's huge inspiration. She's the one person I would spend, if I had a ton of money, I would easily drop $100,000 on her prints. And her prints are like this big. They're very, very small.
Like 8x10 or something?
Small. Yeah. Very, very small. She shot out of a teeny weeny camera. Teeny weeny. But yeah.
Amazing.
But she's my favorite.
Yeah, we're going to put her name in the footnotes for the show so people can look her up if they would want to.
Julia Margaret Cameron.
Julia Margaret Cameron. Okay. Mm-hmm. What kind of camera do you use?
So many.
You don't have favorite?
No, because each camera has its purpose. So it's not, all cameras aren't created equal. Like if I shoot like Leica, they send me cameras. Fuji sends me cameras. I shoot with Canon. I love Nikon. Hasselblad is one of my favorites. But depending on what I'm shooting, like I can't shoot with a Leica if I'm shooting things going really fast, sports, if you have to nail it quick. It can't be done with an M. You can kind of do it with an SL, but with the SL, it's so heavy over time. So when people ask me about cameras, I say, well, what are you shooting? Because I love Hasselblad. They're the top when it comes to like portraiture, landscapes, things that aren't really moving fast. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. They're top notch, but use a Canon to shoot someone jumping. It kills Hasselblad all day long. Use like I'm an Nikon, same thing. So each camera has its place. For instance, when I went to Sierra Leone, I brought a Leica and I brought the Canon. Mm-hmm. And I'm shooting with the Leica. It's cool, but if you have that option of always getting focus, nailing it constantly, you're gonna probably put that Leica down because the Leica is manual. And if you want that wide aperture, it's really hard to get that tacked sharp image. But if you like stop it down to F13, you're good, but you lose that depth of field. And nothing compares to the tracking of Nikon and Leica. It's just Nikon and Canon. Mm-hmm. But the cameras are amazing, trust me, but each camera has its special place, depending on
I hear you. Well, I was not privileged to know that many different cameras. I work with Canon only. And to me, it serves my purpose. I'm happy almost all the time. But yeah, and it's kind of price affordable.
If you picked up, because I always tell people, try it out. Leica, love Leica, you know, great people, this and that. But in other countries, they're actually, what's the best way to say it? Like they wear them around the neck like a necklace.
Oh, wow.
They don't even put batteries in them. You say, oh, look at my $15,000 M. You know, look at my this, that. It's like, okay.
It's very lightweight, buddy, for the camera?
Well, no, because it costs a lot.
Ah.
That's all. It's like wearing a Rolex or wearing a this. Sure, it's cool. Some people really appreciate it, but other people want it just to show, oh, I have money. And that's how a lot of those people are, because people who really shoot, your camera's beat up.
Exactly.
Your camera's been through it. It doesn't matter. But when you see that pristine, no, I can't mess it up because I just paid 15 grand for it or 20,000 for it. I was in Paris and Leica gave me the Leica S. It's a 30 grand, you know, $30,000. Mm-hmm. And I almost got into a fight. And I had my camera about to swing it on this guy. And then my friend said, no, Pep, no. And then everything worked out. And then when I came back to LA, I told the guy, I said, I almost busted some guy upside the head with his camera. And then he's all, well, things happen. But again, it's like a camera to me just has to do the job. It could be $600. It could be $60,000. Doesn't matter. I gave my friend this one camera. She got it from me. It's the Canon 60D.
The one I have.
Yeah. And she said, oh, Pep, thank you. Da, da, da. Like she purchased it from me. And then she was all, Pep, like there's people laughing at my camera, talking about my camera because it's older. I said, let me show you something. I said, do you see all these billboards? Do you see all these magazine ads? You see all this stuff? That camera has been around the world at least 7-8 times, pretty much shot in every country, shot countless billboards, countless magazine ads and covers. with that camera, what you're holding in your hand.
Yeah, it's very good camera. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
It comes from your vision and from your mastery.
People who tend to shoot the very high megapixels, usually landscape, like Peter Lick, he does, you know, crazy stuff. But people who tend to shoot medium format, they shoot it because they shoot a scene, but then they crop it.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, okay, cool, we got it. Where us, we actually get it, we crop it within the camera. We're not just shooting something and then cropping something out of it. That's the benefit of a medium format. It actually makes it easier because you really don't have to work kind of that hard. They aren't the fastest, but as far as quality,
it's good camera, very good camera.
But like I said, I've shot billboards with the 60D and it's perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
Cool. Any fun fact from your life you would want to share?
As in?
Whatever you define by fun.
Everything, every day. there's always something cool, like from cars with my friends to cameras to like, I'm actually, it's like funny, but once I leave here, I'm actually going to Leica, which is right up the street. Mm-hmm. So I'll be there. So just to go see my friends, that's all. Not even about cameras, not even about none of that stuff. Just to go, you know, see my friends and say hi.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah. So I see that you're a very positive person, and that's good. Do you have any favorite phrase or saying which gets you through the bad day?
I think when we have a bad day, it's in our mind. We make it a bad day because either we're choosing to be around that person who's making it bad for us, or we just haven't really accepted our situation. If something happens, like, uh-oh, all right, well, let me just fix it. Instead of like, oh no, what am I gonna do? And no, you just calm down, handle it. So much easier, so much easier. That's... it's easier being nice than mean. So I said, why not be nice? It's easier.
That's exactly my point. I always say that to stay angry at someone takes so much more effort than just enjoying yourself and life around you.
The wasted energy is like, it just doesn't make sense. And well, like I understand it as a kid coming up, but once I realized it's easier to let things go. Someone does something bad to you, okay, lesson learned. You move on. Like, I'm not going to dwell. When you dwell, it eats you up. And that's time taken away from your life. You'll never get back.
A fun question came to my mind right now. They say, and what you think about that, glass is half full or half empty?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you say?
Glass half full, half empty?
Or half empty.
I would have to say half full or half empty. I would honestly have to say that's probably not my glass. I would have to say maybe that's someone else's glass, because mine is either or. It's like, it's not a thing that I even think about or comes into my mind to think in that way almost. It is what it is. It could be full, it could be empty, who cares? Do what you got to do. So it just doesn't really...
I like your answer.
Yeah, because I remember who said it. Bruce Lee used to say that. He said that as well. And I understood the question as a young kid, because I used to love Bruce Lee when I was little. And I read all of his books, and that was one of his things he would say. And I understood it, but it never really, because to me, I'm not trying to fill anything, or I'm not trying to empty anything. is there, you know, and that's how I can, best way I can explain it. Well, in my situation, I guess, mentally.
Mentally, that's good.
Yeah.
I like the way you answer. I usually answer, I will just share my answer. I would say the glass is refillable. That's what keeps me going.
Very cool.
On a bad day, glass is refillable. I used to say glass is never full, never empty, because when you see the liquid, the above the liquid would be air, so it's always full or refillable.
I like that.
Okay, thank you.
Very cool.
Any wisdom you would like to share?
Just be nice. That's all. Smile, say hi, and you have no idea how much that can change that other person's day.
And yours too.
And yours too, for sure.
Wonderful. I've learned quite a bit about you, your work style, work ethics, and all those travels and everything, which is very interesting. And I hope those who would be listening to this episode would enjoy. We're definitely going to put down all the links where they can see your work. And honestly, I can't wait for you to come back sometimes in a few months and share when you will be done with your Malibu project. I would love you to come back, and maybe we will do even video and put it on YouTube or something like that. So I would love to have you back, Pat.
So fun, of course.
I'm wishing you good luck. Stay safe. Don't get that COVID. Just be happy and keep spreading the happiness.
Okay, thank you.
That's it. It's time to wrap up another episode. You can find any of your favorite episodes anywhere where you are listening to your podcasts. Google, iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. Could you possibly do me a favor and leave a review there to help other amazing people like yourself to find my podcast faster? If you got a question, suggestion, or just want to say hello, please find me on Instagram @_TatianaDavidoff. Until next episode, stay safe, motivated, peaceful, happy. Bye-bye.